Good morning and welcome everyone to Jump in Tucson. My name is Kim Nagomo and I work with the host Tom Moulton at the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. Today, Tom has asked me to kick off the show this morning, so good morning everyone and thanks for tuning in to KVOI 10:30 a.m. for this morning's show, Jump in Tucson. Tom joins us from Nashville, Tennessee, where he is attending a theme park employee reunion. Good morning, Tom. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Kim, and hello, everyone. I'm having a great time in the Music City in Nashville, and thanks for tuning in. This is Tom Moulton, and welcome to Jump in Tucson. Five new shows every weekday beginning at 9 a.m. on KVOI, 10:30 a.m., The Voice, featuring local businesses and the folks who jump in every day to serve the public. And I have to tell you, today we have a very unique character, and he's really wrote the definition of jumping in. Today's guest is from Tombstone's original silver mine, the Good Enough Mine and Trolley Tour, Robert Davenport. Welcome, Robert, and good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
Robert, you've been running the mine and the trolley tours for quite a few years. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and certainly a lot about some of the things that you do over there at Good Enough Mine?
Well, the Good Enough Mine, first of all, is the first major producing mine in Tombstone. And what we do is we provide tours for tourism. The tourists get to go down 100 feet down into the mine and do like a small city block down there where they'll still see veins of silver, quartz, calcite, manganese, all kinds of minerals. They'll get demonstrations on how the mining was actually done back in the day. This mine opened up in 1878 and actually closed down in 1898, which means that it was before the hard hat was invented and before the carbide lantern. So everything in this mine was done by hand and candlelight. That was quite a mine to see.
Now, besides the actual mine tours, you have a nice little area right there, right in the heart of Tombstone, and there are a lot of things to do for families while you're visiting the mine as well.
Yes, Tom. You know, family is everything to me. So we wanted to make it a very family-friendly area. So we put in different things for kids, too. We have a little buck room mine where they can go in with a little wooden mallet and wooden drill steel and drill out their own minerals. And we also have gold panning, gem panning. I put in a petting zoo that we've got everything from pigs, goats, alpaca, pony, bulls, donkeys. I mean, it's pretty interesting. And matter of fact, speaking of donkeys, I have the Shefflin Days the first weekend of April every year. And Shefflin Days, we also have a burro race. Last year, or this last April, we had over 82 donkeys from all across from the United States. And we run a 3, 6, and 13 mile race. Not something you see every day.
Well, and I had a chance to visit the donkey race a couple years ago, and I have to tell you, having grown up in suburbia USA, I had no idea the variety of donkeys that are available. And I have to tell you, you saw these donkeys with families with children and senior citizens, and it's really about the cutest thing that I've ever seen. But there's some challenges to this race as well, isn't there, Robert?
Oh, there's a whole lot to it. You know, the 13-mile race is the sanctioned race. That one, the burro has to wear a pack saddle. Burro is Spanish for donkey. The burro has to wear a pack saddle with a pick, a shovel, and an oar pan. You run beside the donkey with holding the lead. If the donkey leaves the trail, you have to capture that donkey and bring it back to the same location it left the trail and continue the race. It also goes up over some tremendously high hills, through some arroyos that have sugar sand in them. I mean, it's a rough trail.
And I remember the most recent race was captured by Susan from the Tombstone Chamber of Commerce, and I guess she was on top of her restaurant, looking down and filming a lot of the activities.
Yeah, she was on top of the Longhorn Restaurant, and she was looking right down on the street because the race starts right on the main street there in Tombstone on Allen Street. And that's where it ends as well. So we have the starting line and the finish line there. So everybody gets to see the race. And also, during the race, we have events for kids, too. I have little swimming pool noodles we've made into donkeys, and little kids can race the swimming pool noodles or the donkey noodles. We also have miniature donkeys so that people can race the miniature donkeys up and down Allen Street. And we have all different kinds of activities. Just everything to get the family involved. You know, one of the things I've seen in Tombstone over 20 years is that most of the things for Tombstone's for the spectators to stand on the side and watch. I wanted to create something where everybody could be involved and actually participate in it.
Well, that's a must-see and must-participate in. Can you tell us the dates for next year so we can go ahead and get that on our calendars?
It'll be the first weekend in April.
But you can't miss that, folks. You want to definitely come to Tombstone and enjoy, really, the donkey race. And, of course, while you're there, there's so much more to see. We're going to be talking a little bit about what else there is to do in Tombstone in another segment. But we've just got a few minutes. Let's touch a little bit, Robert, on who you are.
I'm just Robert. I've got a little bit of a geology background and gemology background. I've worked in the mines, and I just love rocks. I'm just a nut for rocks. If there's a rock, I'll go in and look for it. So we do a lot of exploration down into the mines. I'm working right now about on the 550-foot level, looking for artifacts, trying to rebuild the history of Tombstone. We've got a little museum and gift shop, and we have a lot of artifacts around the mine yard that we've pulled out from underground. Some of them have taken 2.5 to 3 years just to get them to the surface. So that's just my passion. I love the mining. I love rocks.
Well, and you have there's a couple other mines that you've been working really hard to get open, and you actually have a dinner show in one of those mines.
Correct. We have the only dinner theater in a mine in the world, and we're really proud of that. It encompasses a tour, a dinner, and a show. We take you through 3/4 of a mile of tunnels through the Toughnut mine, and then you go down a little ladder, and you're in a room longer than a football field. In that room, we wanted to give you a true 1800s experience. You sit on replica dynamite crates, your tables are powder kegs, the tabletops are the old boardwalk out of Tombstone, and you get a miner's meal. And that's delivered by a headframe up on the surface in an ore bucket down 100 feet to you. You get chili, cornbread, and cobbler, coffee or water, and we have 2 stages, and we do a whole historical show for you right underground.
All right. Thank you, everyone. So it's time for a break, and we will be right back with Tom and Robert at Jump in Tucson. You are listening to Jump in Tucson. My name is Kim Nagomo, and I'm helping out Tom Moulton, who is in Nashville this morning. So, Tom, back to you.
Good morning, Kim. And again, good morning, Robert. This is Jump in Tucson. Very, very special guest, Robert Davenport from Tombstone's Good Enough Mine and Trolley Tours. Robert, let's get a little bit into the history of Tombstone. And we could probably talk for the rest of the show on this, but it all started with this guy named Ed Shefflin, who was a prospector around 1879. Hey, can you take it from there and tell us a little bit about how the heck this town get founded and what was it famous for?
Sure. Ed Shefflin was a young boy that was born in Pennsylvania, made it all the way out to California with his father. And when he was in California, he learned a lot about mining, but he realized he didn't want to be a miner. He loved looking for the minerals. So he traveled all across Western United States and ended up in California again. with the Indian Scouts. The Indian Scouts were on their way to a new place called Camp Huachuca, which is Fort Huachuca today, over near Sierra Vista. So as he got out there, he wanted to go out prospecting, but he figured it'd be safer in numbers. So he went on out with the Indian Scouts prospecting, but he found out that wasn't going to work real well because they had a mission to run and he had a different mission in his mind. So he separated and was by himself for 8 months out there until he found something that was interesting. He eventually got it to his brother and another man by the name of Richard Gerd, who was a mining engineer metallurgist from Michigan, and they realized it was silver. They had it assayed in 1877. It actually assayed out at over $2,000 to the ton of silver. That was amazing back then. So they came back to Tombstone and they started doing some mining. They got down to the 6-foot level and it didn't pan out anymore. Ed said he'd find more and he did. He found it there at the Goodenough Mine. The silver that he found there came back out at $1,800 to the ton, which was a load of money back in the day. Matter of fact, he sold his mines after having them only about 8 months for $600,000. He received $600,000, his brother, and so did Richard Gerd. In today's money, a little over $18.2 million. Pretty good for a guy that only had 10 cents in his pocket.
Absolutely, and it was great to, again, a couple years ago during the donkey that the city of Tombstone honored Ed with his own statue.
Right. He was honored with his own statue, and we have a beautiful painting of him in Shefflin Hall, which was the show hall that was built by Albert Shefflin, his brother. So Tombstone has a lot of treasures in it, and a lot of people miss it. They don't realize that there's a lot more than just the one street in Tombstone. There are a lot of different things here. We have an incredible courthouse, which is a state park. There's a lot of information in there on Ed Shefflin and the mining, the schools, the churches, all kinds of things there. You know, people don't realize that there's a whole lot to Tombstone.
Well, and when you walk it down, walk around and see what's still there, there's a lot of familiar names that you recommend that you've seen in movies like Tombstone and some other movies about the OK Corral. Can you tell us a little bit about some of those historical buildings that are still around?
Well, you know, people come in and they look at the buildings and they don't know that they're the original buildings. Now, when we say original buildings, we're basically saying from 1882 because we had two fires in Tombstone that burned down a lot of the buildings. But at the time, it was also one of the richest cities in the United States. So it rebuilt very fast with the mining that happened there. They took out over 32 million ounces of silver. That was a load of money back in the day. And they were able to build things real fast. We had the finest laces, the best silk. You know, I mean, it was an incredible, very metropolitan town, if you would, for back in the day. In Shefflin Hall, we had Lily Langtry that would come in there and perform shows. You know, and everybody knows Tombstone for the 18-second gunfight because that was the OK Corral gunfight. But we have a lot of shows in town. We have a lot of different things for people to see. And it usually takes 2 to 3 days to actually see everything in Tombstone. People are surprised when they get there. Such a small place with so much to do.
Yeah, and you're going to see Wyatt Earp, and you're going to see Doc Holliday, and you're going to see some other famous characters that were hanging around that time as well.
That's for sure. We have a lot of people that dress up the period clothing. We're trying to keep it as 1800s as the way it was back in the day. That's one of our goals. I'm one of the historic commissioners for the city, and I'm on the Tombstone Restoration Commission. and we're trying to keep the buildings in good shape. We just spent $500,000 on Shefflin Hall to keep it up and going. We have a caboose there that we restored. We have the courthouse that was restored, and we're working on the reading station, which is the library, which used to be the train station in Tombstone.
Oh, I didn't know that one. Hey, so tell us a little bit. I understand that you're renovating the trolley right now, but pretty soon you'll be able to take that tour all around and learn a little bit about the history and see some of the buildings. And it actually takes you real close to where Ed Shefflin was buried.
Right. Our trolley right now is our slow season, so I take it offline at this time and do our yearly maintenance on it, make sure it's in good shape. Yep. And what we want to do is we want to give people the true history of Tombstone. So this is an above-ground tour that goes all through town. We also cover both graveyards. We go up into the mining hills of Tombstone, too, and show you the SA houses and some of the other mines in the area. We cover everything from St. Paul's Episcopal Church, which is a beautiful church with the original stained glass windows in it. Take you out to the 1884 cemetery along with Boot Hill. But just past the 1884 cemetery is Shefflin's monument. Ed Shefflin, when he died at 49 years old of a heart attack. He was buried in Oregon, and his will stated, if it was of no inconvenience, I'd like to be buried in Tombstone, along with my pick, my shovel, and my ore pan. So he's buried there under a miner's claim. I don't think he expected a miner's claim quite as tall as this one. This one's 22 feet tall. They're usually only 3 feet. So, but it's something that people can see, and they can get the feel of what it was like back in the day.
Yeah, that the gentleman that actually conducts the trolley tours was wonderful. Lots of information. He stopped along the way and asked if you had a question, and he would do his best to answer it. I think the exciting part of the trolley tour, in addition, of course, to seeing all the historical buildings, was when he did go above the town and you looked down and you saw the mines. I mean, underneath you couldn't see, but you could see the several mines that were in the area. So it seems like a big part of Tombstone is built above all these mines.
Right. You know, I think it's very important. That's one reason why we added the Tombstone Hills. And there's, when you get up the elevation up there, you can look out over the city of Tombstone, but you can also see the Dragoon Mountains where Chief Cochise and Geronimo were. You get to see the true history of Tombstone, and you get to feel it that way. We're the only tour that covers all of Tombstone that way. And I think it's vital to bring it to life to people, to make them feel what the settlers did back in the day.
I think the Dragoon Mountain story is one that a lot of people either don't recall or don't know. And I also thought that was a very interesting segment of his tour. Those two Indians that you just talked about they're in just about every history book. But the fact is that they were just down the road from Tucson and very visible from Tombstone. That's a story all in itself.
That's for sure. And people don't realize we're high desert. We're a lot cooler than Tucson is.
Well, especially tomorrow where it's supposed to be 100 degrees for the first time in Tucson for 2024. And you going over to about an hour and a half away, and there's Tombstone, and it's not going to be 100 degrees.
Nope, not at all. Beautiful weather.
Very interesting stuff, Tom and Robert. Can't wait to hear more from both of you after the break. This is Jumpin' Tucson, and we will be right back. Welcome back to Jumpin' Tucson, where we are talking about the Tombstone, Arizona, the town too tough to die. I'm Kim Nagomo, helping out Tom today. Tom, back to you.
And thanks, Kim, and you're doing an excellent job wish I could be with you guys. I'm coming here from Nashville, the Music City, and enjoying a Six Flags reunion. Some of the places where I used to work many years ago. But I am now the executive director of the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance, and I get to meet people like Robert Davenport, who clearly is an example of the folks that we have in Jump in Tucson. I'm on the show every Thursday with a different guest. But let's get back to Robert. Robert, you told me a lot of stories about how you literally had to dig yourself into the mines in Tombstone to get them open up for the public. Now, you hear about Karchner Cavern, how they spent millions and millions of dollars, and it turned out beautifully. Certainly the Colossal Cave was put together by the Civilian Corps. But to hear the story and the passion behind it in order to get these mines open so the public could see them, it's quite a story. Robert, can you share that with us?
Well, I guess the latest one would be the Dinner Theater, which was the Tough Nut Mine. The Tough Nut Mine, we started working on it. We didn't know what we were going to do with it at first. And it became quite a passion because it's such a large mine, but large for Tombstone. There's 530 miles of tunnel underneath Tombstone. Most people don't realize that. There's a lot under there. But which is small for Arizona. Globe has one of the largest mines in the world, and along with Bisbee. But ours, we've made accessible to the tourists. And the way we did that is we scale the mine, which is like you guys probably vacuum your floor or mop your floor. I got to do the roof. So when we're going through the mine, I use crowbars and sledgehammers, and we literally take everything loose off the ceiling of it so that it's good and safe. Along with that, we have to manually move all of the rock out. To open up the Dinner Theater, we moved over 75 tons of rock by hand. There is no equipment able to be used down there. And I was very fortunate, had a lot of friends that are involved in mining, and I was able to call on them. They just always jump at the chance to get in the mines. And so they came down, they did it, they did inspections for me. And it's just been an incredible experience being able to get it open for the tourists to be able to see. For them to see what men did back in the 1800s by hand.
I you know, whole new meaning to blood, sweat, and tears. Putting that mine together so the public could really go down into it. Now, you had an interesting story on how the food is delivered every time you run the show.
Yeah, it was trying to keep everything 1800s is pretty interesting because you've got to look at what's actually feasible. And what we did is we built a head frame over one of the air shafts, which is about a 90-foot shaft. And we took a transformer, a power transformer, and converted it into an ore bucket, put rivets on it and everything, make it look just like an ore bucket, but so that we can seal it so it stays good and clean inside. And we actually have the food catered by the Longhorn Restaurant. They do a great job on that with the chili, the cornbread, and the cobbler. And we put it in the ore bucket, and then it's winched 100 feet down into the mine or 90 feet down into the mine. And that's where it goes on to the servicing table. And everything's put in Dutch ovens. Everything's just like in the 1800s. So it's quite an experience because when the tourist comes down, they get to see the ore bucket coming down with their food. It's something you don't get to see every day, that's for sure.
And probably nowhere else either in the United States. I mean, obviously, the silver mine, especially the Good Enough mine, produced, you mentioned the number, the amount of silver that it produced while it was still operating. But you tell the story about the silver dollars and where they came from. And can you share that story with us again?
Well, the silver that came out of the Goodenough mine, the Goodenough and the Toughnut mine were mined together under one name for a while. But the silver that came out of there was later processed down in Charleston, which was on the San Pedro River. Then it was catered all the way up to Fairbanks, Arizona, where it was put on the train. And the train then went from there through El Paso all the way to New Orleans, where it was minted into your 1880 to 1882 Morgan silver dollars. So if you find a silver dollar with an O on it under the talons of the eagle, more than likely it came out of the Goodenough mine. 83 to 86 came out of the Tombstone District mixed with the Comstock load out of Nevada.
Do you have you seen any of these silver dollars?
Yes, I have quite a few of them. And I keep them.
You're not going to sell them, are you?
No, I'm not. I do give some of them away to the first person who passes Shefflin's Monument during the Burrow Race, though. So yeah, that's one of their prizes.
I remember that. Yeah, that's quite a bit of history of where those silver dollars came from. Now, I mean, I know you had. There's some other mines that are near you. And they're pretty popular. But certainly, copper is found in Arizona, but there's a lot of, talk about, silver and, that there could be a shortage coming, up in that, it might be, financially feasible. Do you see any of these old silver mines opening back up again?
I don't know. With all the government regulations and everything, silver would have to be around $250 an ounce to break even. We get a lot of silver as a byproduct from other mining, like the Bisbee mines, the Globe mines, Morenci, all those other mines. So I don't really know what's going to happen with silver. That's one of those big guessing games that you do anytime you deal with economics.
Well, I tell you that I think talking about silver and how valuable it was and how valuable it is still does nothing but support why we should go and really take a little piece of history and experience it in Tombstone, especially at the Goodenough mine and the Toughnut mine. Now, tell us a little bit about, the dinner theater, and when does it operate during the year?
Okay, right now we have it closed down June through October because of the monsoon season. We just don't want to take a chance. We've had a 10-foot wall of water come down the ravine where the entrance to the mine is. So we close it down during that time frame, but we'll be starting back up in October. We try to do it two times a month. It's quite a production to be able to get the food down there, get actors, everything. So it's quite a production, and we want to make sure that people have a true good experience on it. My whole idea was to give them an experience of being in the 1800s. So we tried to do that as much as possible by having them live it. We take them right through the mine. They're down there with the miners. They're hearing people from the 1800s, the characters that are portrayed, which this season is George Parsons, who was a miner down there. Also, Clara Brown, who was a female journalist for the San Diego Tribune. She was one of the contributors for that. So we take the dialogue from their diaries and their journals, so you get the true history of Tombstone.
Yeah, authenticity, you don't have anything better than your trip to Tombstone. I love the Old West. As you know, I worked at Calico Ghost Town and then worked at Old Tucson. But we were trying to do the best to make it authentic. Whereas you go to Tombstone, it is the real thing. And whether you want to go see some of the scenes, of course, were made famous in the movie Tombstone. Birdcage Theater is still there, still operating. I didn't realize that when I took my tour, that there actually is an entrance to one of the mines there.
Yeah, there are entrances to mines all over Tombstone. It's pretty interesting how much of the mine is underground and how much of the mine comes up in different buildings. So they found their way in underground any way possible.
And those characters that you hear about, like Big Nose Kate, they were real people.
Yes, they were real people. Very much so. When you come to Tombstone and you get to experience it, go in the places and talk to the people and get to see what they did. You mentioned the Birdcage Theater. You go in there, they have an incredible museum back there. They have a hearse back there that's silver-lined. It's beautiful. And all kinds of things in Tombstone to be able to see.
Okay, it's time for a break now. Thank you, gentlemen. We will be right back to today's final segment with Tom and Robert. This is Jumpin' Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. We are back, and this is Jumpin' Tucson. I'm Kim Nagomo from the SAAA, and Tom is joining us in Nashville with his guest Robert Davenport from Tombstone. Tom, great show. Take it away.
And thank you again, Kim, for being there in the studio, and welcome back to Jumpin' Tucson. We are talking with Robert Davenport. I'm not sure, Robert, if I call you a general manager or the chief operations manager or just the boss, but you're there and you're not only just promoting the Good Enough Mine and trolley tours, you also are probably one of the best spokesmen for Tombstone. And I really appreciate getting an opportunity to talk with you. But there's besides yourself, there's a couple of other people that are really promoting the heck out of Tombstone with you. Can you share a little bit about who those folks are?
Yes, Susan Wallace does a real good job with the chamber. She gets a lot of information out there to the people. She has several of the businesses there in town, and she has a real heart, a real passion for the history of Tombstone. Along with our mayor, even Dusty Escapol. The Escapol family's been there since just about Ed Shefflin. And he has a real desire to keep the history of Tombstone pure. The staff there at the city hall, we have a media department that's doing a fantastic job there. We have, most people know Sonny, that she gets out there and dresses up 1880s and goes to events all over Tucson and all over the Highway 80 group. So, you know, there's a lot of information there that needs to get out. And people just don't realize. They think that everything is just a 18-second gunfight. There's a whole lot more to Tombstone than that.
There certainly is. And this historic Highway 80, when you're jumping on the road from Tucson, you're gonna pass through some wonderful things to see and Benson, and then of course there's Tombstone and Bisbee and Douglas. Douglas, beautiful historical churches. We mentioned Bisbee with another wonderful mine that you actually get to go in some of the little cars that transfer the ore back and forth. And it's like riding a little ore train, and just wonderful festivals as well. We don't have a lot of time left, Robert, but I have to tell you, I don't know who puts all those festivals together, but you guys, Tombstone, could write the book on having authentic festivals.
Well, we do the best job we can on everything. You know, we love the tours that come in. We love the people. We love our history. You know, just to give you an idea, in the Tough Nut Dinner Theater, I've done weddings down there. We've done military reenlistments. I have corporate meetings down there. You know, we try to fit whatever people want to do in Tombstone. We try to compensate for whatever they would like to do and make sure they have fun. You know, our whole goal is to make sure that people can get out of the city, come to Tombstone, and have a good time forget about the problems and the worries back home and just live the old West, bring it to life for them.
And you have, your town folks there are, besides them having the passion and they get dressed up in the authentic 1800 costumes, and of course they don't call them costumes, it's what they wear every day. They are living the dream of being in the old West, and they're so friendly and they're so welcoming. And you see them in the bars and Wyatt Earp Bar. You see them in Big Nose Kate's, and they're part of the history. We've all been to Renaissance Festival where these folks dress up during that time period. But I think when you go to Tombstone and you meet the town people, you think you're back in the 1880s with these folks.
Well, it's sort of fun because that's our life. I mean, that's what we live, and we don't live like the cities do with all the rushing and everything else and all the traffic and everything. It's just like being back in the 1800s. We just live every day the way it is. We love having friends. We love meeting people, and we love helping people. That's what it's about. We want to have families in there to learn what the history was like and see what their ancestors lived.
Well, and you do such a fine job. And Robert, we just have about a minute or so, and I want to personally thank you for joining with me today. I apologize I'm not there looking at you and enjoying your smile, but you told us a lot about Tombstone that I think of many, many people are now well informed about why you should go to Tombstone. Now, you do have a wonderful website. What is that website?
GoodEnoughSilverMine.com.
And it's full of pictures. It's full of pictures and it's full of videos, and it's not quite the same when you go there. But folks, don't forget that it's a little bit cooler in Tombstone. So don't think that you can't go out there during the summer and enjoy the town. Everything's operating, almost everything, I should say. The trolley is being normal maintenance going on, but here's several. It's a small enough town, big enough to see a lot of stuff, but small enough to walk around. And there's restaurants there, there's bars, there's hotels that are there. So you don't have to stay in Sierra Vista. You can stay right there in Tombstone, and you can live the dream. And so I encourage everyone to make a trip to Tombstone via Historic Highway 80 and just have a great time. You've been listening to Robert Davenport from the Tombstone's Good Enough Mine in Trolley Tours. And Robert, have a wonderful summer season.
Thank you, Tom. You have a great day, too.
And Kim did a wonderful wonderful job today, and I'm going to give it back to you to close out the show.
Thank you, Tom. Don't forget, everyone, Dr. Ackerley will be here live tomorrow at 9 a.m., and Tom will be back next Thursday with a new live show from KVOI Studios on SCAL International, a professional global tourism organization with its very own chapter in Tucson. Thanks for listening, and see you back next Thursday. This is Jump in Tucson.